Hello and welcome to this episode of Star Wars Universe Podcast. Today we are talking about episode 5 of the Book of the Mandalore Boba Fett. Yeah, this is the Book of Boba Fett. Episode 6 of the Book of Mandalorian Fett. And we're going to be doing that with myself, Matthew Fox, and our special guest who I'll talk to you about right after this commercial break. We have no control over. Welcome back. I'm Matthew, your host. Unfortunately, our normal co-host, Ashley Coffin, cannot be joining us today. She's got some really exciting and important stuff that she's doing that hopefully she'll get to talk to you about soon. But I was very happy. We did have a guest already lined up. Our guest is the host of the Jedi Journals, the Superhero Suite, and Enjoy Stuff, a man who ordered the original mail-in Boba Fett action figure, Jovial J. Shepard. Jay, how you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me over, Matthew. I'm very excited to talk about the Book of Cobra Book of Boba Fett this week. So.
Exactly. We will be talking about Cobra Kai on the Superhero Ethics Podcast.
I'll get
you on there at some point too. But yeah, so Jay, you and I met because you were a guest on the Marvel Movie Minute that I've been doing about Thor, along with Andy Nelson.
Absolutely, yes.
And I heard you had a lot of background with Star Wars and stuff like that, and so I was like, I knew I wanted to get you on this. Talk to us a bit about kind of where you come from with Star Wars, and clearly you were a Star Wars fan for quite a while.
I'm OG Star Wars fan, yeah. I was there for the original three films and the and the prequels, and sometime in the early 2000s, I decided to kind of start getting into the Star Wars community, joined as a reporter on Rebel Scum and TheForce.net, and have been working with them for about the last 17, 18 years, and nice. Started podcasting with the Forcecast as guest appearances as we were doing roundtables on the Clone Wars and talking about all sorts of other stuff, and then started my own show, The Jedi Journals, which discussed everything in terms of Star Wars literature, and that show went from 2011 to the end of last year, and we've kind of put it on a hiatus right now just due to job and family and life things and not having time to read all the books and stuff that are coming out. So yeah, I've been digging Star Wars for most of my life here.
I hear you. What I think you and I are of a pretty similar generation. My mother always would joke that when I was very young, she never needed a babysitter. She just knew that if she popped the first Star Wars movie, what we now call A New Hope, into the Betamax to date myself. Yes, a Betamax. If that was on the TV, I was not going to get in any trouble for the 2 hours she had to run errands. So yeah,
that's awesome.
I get that.
Yeah.
So talk to us a bit about, we're going to dive into this episode, episode 6, as you corrected me, thank you very much, of the Book of Boba Fett, and I think that's something we're going to talk about in more depth of, you know, people have thoughts about, is this still the show, Book of Boba Fett, and we'll get into that, but let me just start by, what have you been thinking about the show overall, like, before even we get into this specific episode?
So, with this episode and with the previous episode, I'm a little disappointed just in terms of the fact that the main character has not been on the show. I mean, it's called The Book of Boba Fett. And you know, if we weren't already getting a Mandalorian series, I would say, you know, these are like backdoor pilot kind of episodes. You know, those episodes of the normal TV show that you watch where your main characters become the tertiary characters and somebody else takes over because they're going to get a spinoff at some point. That being said, I'm very excited to have been picked to be on this particular episode because the advancements of the expanded universe and moving cartoon elements into the live action realm here that they did this week was just mind-boggling. And I love a good Western, and I thought this was 50% of this was a good Western, a space Western in this case. I really loved the Marshall episode of The Mandalorian that we got, what was that, last season, I guess, with Cobb Vanth originally. So, yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised at what they're doing, and I'm just surprised overall at the... I don't know if they're risks. It seems like it might be a risk in terms of alienating fans that don't know what the heck's going on right now, you know?
Yeah. And that is why I'm a little sad that Ashley Coffin can't join us because She's someone who loves the movies and has really enjoyed the live action shows. She hasn't watched any of the animated shows, and so she's been that great perspective of like, okay, is this too much fan service or is it being caught up? So I'm definitely gonna enjoy hearing the from your fans, like, what do you love, what do you not love, is it too much, is it not? But you're right, there's so much from those shows, and it's funny, just starting on the Western point, like, we joke about, like, is this the Book of Boba Fett, is this the Mandalorian? Honestly, a lot of this felt like the new season of Deadwood that I've been craving. And, like, I kept thinking, like, at the first, I wanted Al Swearengen to show up. And if there's anyone like Al Swearengen in the Star Wars universe, it's Cad Bane.
Yeah.
So, like, that's, you know.
And with W. Earl Brown playing the Weequay bartender, he was the bartender in Deadwood, right? So,
Is that the same actor? I didn't even put that together.
He was, I think he was the bartender. He was in Deadwood. This is his second appearance, because he was in the Marshall episode of Mandalorian. Right. So yeah, it's that is probably one of my favorite things about Star Wars. It's just in terms of genre bending, it can take from so many other different things, and it has informed my filmic choices of being interested in samurai epics of like Kurosawa works or John Sturges or John Ford westerns, because I grew up watching Star Wars and Indiana Jones, and then you discover these other films and you're like, oh my gosh, they watched this film and then they took these elements and put it in Star Wars, and that's what I like about Star Wars, and so now I like this other stuff too. So it's fun.
Definitely. Like, I'm not a huge anime fan, but I know for those who are, the Star Wars Visions was so fantastic, like taking this and putting it into that genre as well. Well, and let's talk about, we're going to get into the elements of this specific episode, because there's a lot to talk about, but I think one of the things people are talking about a lot online, and you brought this up, is this question of, like, is this really the Book of Boba Fett anymore? With, you know, he was not on screen in the slightest at the last episode. In this, he appears on screen, but he literally doesn't say a word of dialogue in this episode. And on the one hand, I do want more of him. I had a feeling, though, and I don't know if you've been feeling this. Have you been watching the Disney Plus Marvel shows?
Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, big fan of those.
I've really loved those, but at times I've felt a little unhappy that they all felt like they didn't feel like a connected universe. You know, they all felt like they were each in their own thing, you know, like what Wanda was doing wasn't affecting what was happening with, you know, the blip stuff in Falcon the Winter Soldier. It wasn't affecting the Hawkeye stuff. Here, this feels like it's all just and I think they kind of said this was basically going to be season 3 of The Mandalorian. I feel like they're turning this more into an ensemble show of just, we're going to follow the characters whose stories are most relevant now. And you're right, it's a little weird because it's still called The Book of Boba Fett, and I want more Boba Fett, but I'm loving that interconnectivity, that they're not afraid to just say, let's just run with Mando for a couple episodes.
And that's something that's fresh. You're right, you don't get that in other shared universes or other, you know, spin-off shows. They don't do that, right? The spinoff is to segment the new character that you've spun off. The fact that they are kind of bringing this full circle, I'm also assuming that, you know, the people that are watching The Book of Boba Fett did watch The Mandalorian, because, you know, it leads into it. Because if you didn't, you're probably
very
lost.
Confused.
You're like, why are we watching this other Boba Fett now? That everyone's talking about. I get what you're saying about the Marvel shows, and, you know, with the way that Marvel's working their stuff, it does seem like their shows are individual silos to test out and expose people to these new characters before elevating them into the filmic universe,
right.
Even though it is supposed to, you know, even it is all one universe. Here, you know, Lucasfilm has, you know, made their movies recently, and, you know, for better or for worse, you know, they are now doing stuff in the television realm because that's a more fertile area lower risk or whatever. And, you know, Dave Filoni really just likes playing in the sandbox, and really I do like the interconnectedness and the getting the chance to see all these various characters interact with one another, though I do feel You had mentioned fan service, you know, earlier. Mm-hmm. There is a high level of that, and sometimes I feel like it's a really fine line, right? It's there's a tipping point to it, and I don't talk to too many people that are not kind of in the know. So yeah, it would be an interesting perspective to find out from people who don't, like my wife. She watches mm-hmm. the movie. Well, she's watched all the shows, but like she didn't know that was Cad Bane. Like she didn't right. recognize him not in, you know, animated form. So
yeah, it's been interesting because I know like in the MCU that's often been a frustration, and I don't want to go into spoilers, but in more recent Marvel properties, there's started to be more crossover from other parts of the Marvel universe that are happening that I think people are really happy about. Mm-hmm. But traditionally, there hasn't been much of it. People have been sad about that. And, you know, we've been saying that, like, with both this show and with The Bad Batch that came before it, there's been all these times when there was a moment that, you know, if you saw the animated show or if you'd played the Fallen Order video game, like, you recognized what was happening. But if you didn't, you like, you know, the little robot, the BD robot that was part of the Tatooine, you know, garage, like, if you played the video game, you recognized it. But even if you didn't, you still thought it was pretty cool. So
yeah.
It's been fun seeing how they're, and I think you're right, it's gonna be interesting seeing if they do start crossing the line, or even if they have.
Well, and for me, what really gave me goosebumps last week and just a scotch this week was I guess it was 2 weeks ago. When we went into Jabba's palace, we got to see like the back entrance and everything, mm-hmm. and we got into the kitchen. And I swear, they pulled it directly from the map in Battlefront, because I've run around that entire palace hundreds of times playing Battlefront, and I'm like, oh, you know, yep, there's the kitchen, and you know, here's this long hallway, and if we go up those steps, there's the throne room, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's.
Oh, that's awesome.
They're, you know, because you mentioned they're pulling from Fallen Order as well. So the Star Wars universe has always been that. There have always been the nods. Well, it usually goes the other way, right? The comic books and the video games have the nods to the movies.
Right.
The cartoon show kind of goes both ways. It references other cartoon things and some other expanded universe stuff. So this is really interesting to, you know, to be getting these elements, like, in live action now for the first time to kind of be the center of everything here.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny because, and that's an example where I'm on the other side, because I didn't play that video game, so I had no idea about that. I just thought it was great to see this part of the palace.
Yeah.
Mostly I was noticing like, okay, why is it that the droid who has all of the like chopping arms isn't the sous chef? Like that's what the sous chef does. But you know, that's my own little complaint to someone who wishes he had a sous chef when I cook.
And why would a droid turn itself off? But that was...
Self-protection. So let's talk about this particular episode. Overall, I'm sensing you were kind of a little... Would wish we had more Boba Fett, but otherwise you were a pretty big fan.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed the Western aspects of it a little bit more than the Jedi training moments, though. Mm-hmm. It was good to see Grogu again. I've got some specific thoughts about that. I have some not nice things to say about Luke at the end of the episode that I screamed at my TV.
I think we might be on the same page there, so we'll enjoy when we get to that.
Okay, yeah. I don't want to skip ahead here. But yeah, overall, solid episode. Mm-hmm. I have found, with the exception of episode 5, right. My favorite episodes have, very much like the Star Trek movies, have been the even-numbered episodes this season.
Yeah.
So 2, 4, and 6 have outweighed everything else, though 5 was excellent. But, you know, full Mandalorian, no Boba Fett at all in that one. So
yeah. Yeah. No, I think I'd agree with you. I think I've been really enjoying all of it. I know there's been a lot of folks who were really like, and I'm kind of curious your thoughts on this, because you, as someone who, like you said, you had the original Boba Fett action figure, you've been a fan for a long time. People kept saying, like, we need Boba Fett to be kicking ass more, to be more of, like, the combat guy. And I know that there's a whole bunch of comic stuff that I don't know. I have seen him in the holiday special, which they kind of referenced with the giant creature he's riding, yep. But that's a whole other story.
Yeah, and the Mandalorian's gun from the first season
is
the one from that as well, yeah.
But the thing, what I've always been struck by about Boba Fett is, at least from the original movies, I always thought the most impressive thing that Boba Fett ever did was that he was the only one who figured out Han Solo's plan and followed him, you know, when the garbage was dumped. And so I always thought, like, Boba Fett to me is first and foremost like an intelligence character. Like, he outsmarted Han Solo and caught him that way. And so, like, him being this kind of planning, building a team instead of just going out and kicking butt, this fits at least what I would understand of Boba Fett.
Yeah, and he was really the only one that stands up to Darth Vader in the original films. You know, he's in Empire, because, you know, Vader's like, you know, no disintegrations, and, you know, we're doing this. And he's like, he's worth a lot to me. It's like, dude, you don't talk back to him. at the time, my opinion has always been that the reason Boba Fett was awesome and everybody liked him is because nobody knew anything about him. He's this dude in this cool armor, but you have no idea. There's an action figure. Obviously, he was important enough to tease prior to it. I mean, it's the same kind of thing with Darth Maul, right? There's this enigmatic character you don't know about. He's the bad guy, you know, the man with no name, you know, kind of like the Clint Eastwood series. From The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. And over the years, there was all this EU expanded universe information that was put out on him, and fans, you know, devoured that and filled in all this backstory, and then that became not canon, and, you know, they did Attack of the Clones, and you found out that he was a clone, and now all this other stuff. It's not for me to second guess the creators on this, and exposing too much of Boba Fett over the years has just diluted. I mean, I don't think he's any like worse than he was before, but you kind of look at, you know, the last thing we saw about him in the movies was he gets his backpack bumped and he, you know, goes off like a punk and falls into the Sarlacc. And it's like, well, it's kind of a waste of a really good character. Well, I mean, obviously they didn't waste him. They've done a lot of other stuff, but fans have lived with this character for 40 plus years. And there's a lot of, you know, in all of the various fandoms, not just Star Wars fandoms, but, you know, there are a lot of people that are very precious about their characters and their stories and inject a lot of energy into fan fiction and reading and understanding all sorts of stuff. So when something happens in that fan universe, in the official version of the fan universe,
right,
that doesn't match with their stories, you know, there's a lot of emotional reaction to that. And I think Boba Fett kind of has fallen into that area in a number of places. But, you know, just with what they're telling here, I don't think that there's anything that's, you know, wrong about what they've shown about him. You're right. He is a super smart guy, and they're showing that here. He discovers a different way to do things. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, this wasn't working. I don't want to just be a bounty hunter. Like, I don't want to just work for other people. I need to work for myself.
Right.
Which is, you know, I mean, it is going back to the idea of, well, that's what Django did. I mean, Django worked for other people, but it was to meet his own needs to further his, you know, his life and his lifestyle and stuff.
Especially because, like you said, I mean, he was the one who was willing to stand up to Darth Vader. That wound up not working out for him very well. Like, he was able to get what he needed, but then he got kind of attached to Jabba and then sent off to the Sarlacc pit. And obviously that did not work out well. And the physics of jetpacks we can discuss at a different point. But I think that's a really good point. I think you're right that like, when a character is kind of a blank slate, we can put a lot onto them.
Become attached to that, right? When there's no reason to assume that that's what it happens to be, just even though it seems like that from all the evidence until there's something on screen. Like, you know, when somebody dies in a movie or TV show, right? They're not dead until you see the body. Yeah. And even then, we're not sure.
As with one Cobb Vance that we'll definitely be discussing. But let's actually then transition to, because I feel like this show has three real parts, or kind of two and a half. There's Cobb Vanth and all the stuff about him and the town and will they get involved, and then Cad Bane coming in at the end. And then there's all the stuff that happens on the planet where Luke is trying to set up the school with Ahsoka and the Mando and Grogu and Luke.
Right.
And since Luke is also a character that it seems people have had some thoughts about and some thoughts about whether these are good or bad impressions of, and we're not going to get into the Last Jedi conversation here, although I know, you know, people know I'm a fan of it, other people aren't, and that's totally fine. But what was kind of your let's just kind of dive into what happens here on this planet. What was kind of your feeling about let's actually just start with Mando and Ahsoka.
So Ahsoka showing up was a surprise. I was not expecting that. Always good to see Rosario Dawson, though I always have the tickle in my head where I'm like, it would be nice to see how Ashley Eckstein would have done this, because I, you know, that was Ahsoka to me for seven seasons of the Clone Wars.
That's the voice actress who played her in the Clone Wars.
Correct. Yeah. And she's just a lovely person. If anyone's ever met her at a convention, she's so personable and you know, she's a good voice actor, and I think she could have worked it out here. I felt like there was some spinning of wheels in that, it just in the fact that Din Djarin shows up and he's just waiting, and then he's like, "I want to see Grogu," and she's like, "Sure," and you know, but then kind of distracts him to, "Well, do you know, are you really seeing him for him or for you?" And he's like, "Hey, I just really want to give him this," and you know, she gives the Mandalorian a number of things to think about. And I was almost thinking that we were going to get, you brought up The Last Jedi. I thought we were going to get a moment where she takes the bag that he gave her and just kind of tosses it over her shoulder. Oh. Like Luke did with the lightsaber in Last Jedi. That, you know, okay, it doesn't really matter, but you know, she's a much more respectful character than that. It was an interesting interaction due to their past. Yeah. But it did. It just didn't seem. It seemed like there was more screen time, but not much was happening in that interaction there. I felt like we could have trimmed that, and that is, I guess, my thought overall with some of the training stuff. It felt a little more padding in this particular episode.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true, and it's. I had so many mixed feelings on this, and I'm kind of just like going to dump it all out, and then we can make it apart bit by bit.
Yeah, rummage through it.
I'll say one thing is, like you, I was a huge Ahsoka fan, and I have thought for years, but especially once I realized that Ahsoka was coming back into this part of the universe, that, you know, spoilers here for Clone Wars and for Rebels, but it's long enough ago that I think it's okay. To me, one of the most powerful moments of all of the animated is how hard Ahsoka holds on to the goodness that is in Anakin, and just the scene in which she has to confront Darth Vader in Rebels, and you know, where she wants to save Anakin and has to realize Anakin is gone, and you know, and then says, like, "Then I will avenge him," and it's just this wonderful line of him saying, "Revenge is not the Jedi way. I am no Jedi." And I at one point I got fixated on, I need the moment when Ahsoka realizes that Anakin turned back to the good side before he died, and that it was his own son who did that.
Yeah.
And so, on the one hand, like, getting to see her and Luke was so powerful to me, and her just that throwaway line of, like, "I'm a longtime friend of the family."
Yeah.
Like, I got chills hearing that. But it also, it also felt so, it's like, okay, you're telling us these two characters are connected now. I know she's getting her own show, and so maybe that's when it'll happen, but, like, I need that moment to happen still, you know?
Yeah, like, I want to see her sit down, and it's like, "All right, we're going to have some blue milk. Let me tell you about your dad." And, you know, does Luke even know, like, her connection? You know, it's like, I have questions.
Yeah, like, there's so much about that I want to see, and I'm now putting it all on the Ahsoka show, because I certainly hope.
Yeah. Now, I could see them, right, doing stuff like that in the Ahsoka show. I worry about the continued inclusion of Luke. I understand why he was necessary here, but the Uncanny Valley is wide and far, and it is still very uncanny in this episode. It vacillated widely there just due to the fact that in some scenes I could see it looking like Mark Hamill. In other scenes, it was like a really good version of a video game vision of Luke. It was better than it was in the Mandalorian finale, but we got so much more Luke. It was very distracting, and not as distracting as like the Leia and the Tarkin from mm-hmm. Rogue One, but it's, you know, you realize yeah. you're not looking at Mark Hamill and you're looking at a thing, yeah. right? It's
yeah, it definitely started to throw me. The voice was going in and out a bit. And at some point it made me think, well, A, I feel like, I don't know, and it's in part because I feel like I spent so much time arguing with people about Last Jedi and is this the right Luke or is this not, that anytime we bring back Luke, I'm just sort of like a little PTSD'd about that whole conversation and it bringing it back up. But which what I say as someone with PTSD, I'm not trying to make light of that.
Right.
But not about this situation, to be clear. But like, but also, like, I've seen the fan cast ideas of Stan Sebastian and mm-hmm. no, Sebastian Stan.
Sebastian Stan. Yeah. yeah.
Thank you, Sebastian Stan. Like, at this point, if you're going to make him that much of a character, why not just cast someone like that? You know,
right?
Like, I think you could do
and
that.
At that point, you know, find a good lookalike and give them a little bit of makeup or maybe a little digital touch up. Speaking of Sebastian Stan, I checked out the first episode of Pam and Tommy, and mm-hmm. I cannot believe how much that he and Lily James look like Pam and Tommy. It's you know, they did oh, yeah. a really good job. And as far as I know, there's no digital touch up, right? It's just makeup and attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I saw the previews and I like, you know, I was a kid growing up with those as major, you know, characters and in the TV world and like the actors, I mean. Yeah. So I had that same experience.
Yeah.
So there's that, but there's also, and I don't know if this is what you're referring to, but this is the other thing that threw me. And again, I want to be careful that I'm not just projecting my own headcanons here.
Right.
But I think one of the things that the Clone Wars, I thought, did really well, and this is why part of what I liked about The Last Jedi, is that I think if you're paying attention to the Clone Wars, you get to the end of it and think, the Jedi were kind of screwed up. Like, the Jedi had a lot of bad ideas, and the Jedi had a lot of...
You get that from the prequels.
Yeah.
Let alone the Clone Wars, and even more, right. I used to think the Jedi, from the original trilogy, I thought mm-hmm. the Jedi were this cool sect of like warrior priests, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And like they had it all going for them. And then Lucas introduces the prequels, which I enjoy thoroughly in various ways, and the Clone Wars. And you find out, you know, boy, they were like the worst managers and like just...
Yep.
So short-sighted, and it wasn't like, I guess, well, it was kind of hubris, but it was really like, they just weren't paying attention to the big yeah. picture, right? They were like micromanaging stuff.
My academic background from a different part of my life is in religion and religious history and theology. And like, there's a long history of when the religious leadership sort of like stops remembering that its job is to sort of help point people towards the divinity and just thinks that it's the divinity itself. And that's, I think, the Jedi perfectly. Well, the point of that being, I felt like one of the messages that comes through loud and clear is telling people not to have attachments while also telling them to have compassion. It doesn't work. It's a bad idea.
Yeah. And the things that I saw in this particular episode that I disagree with, but I don't. They have to do the things that mm-hmm. the things that I recognize that
yeah.
they're doing with the character. They have to do because, of course, this takes place after Return of the Jedi and before The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi.
Right.
So we've got Luke has to run his path that we already know he's going to do. But yeah, he goes through all of these. He's reinvesting and reinventing these failed teachings that he just doesn't seem to have a grasp on how bad right. it was, right? He really only knows these things, these lessons from Yoda, who again, even after all the stuff that happened, Yoda yeah. continued to teach these things to Luke, obviously. So I had choice words to say to Luke at the end because mm-hmm. part of his lessons to Grogu was they climb up this, you know, these beautiful thin bamboo shoots and are looking out over this beautiful valley. And he's like, see, everything here is in balance. And at the end of the episode, he's like, and you have a choice. You either go with the Mandalorian or you stay with me, but you can't have both. And I'm yeah. like,
It's such a binary. There's no balance anymore.
Yeah, it was frustrating, to say the least, because I feel like he's really going to force Grogu's hand, because, of course, Grogu's already made that attachment. That's obvious. At least, I mean, that's what I feel is obvious. They can obviously do whatever they want.
Right.
But I think that's what's going to happen. He's going to go off because the Mando is no longer part of the Mandalorians, and he has to redeem himself. And if Grogu is not part of the Jedi, they become their own thing. And
yeah, I really hope that's where it's going, because it was one of those moments where it was like, this is either terrible or fantastic writing. You know, because it's the kind of thing where, like, I see that I think Luke is wrong. I don't know if the writer does. I think the writers do. It's Filoni, and I want to trust them.
Yeah, it's Filoni and Favreau. Yeah, I feel like they've been paying attention.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, they do these great callbacks, like having the Sandcrawler with the giant crate dragon skull mounted on
good.
It, like some weird 70s Ratfink art.
It looks kind of like, the 70s art, I think, is so perfect for it. And it, you know, one of the things that I keep thinking about, and this is kind of my own theory I've been developing, but like if you watch Rebels, if you watch some of the other shows, like Kanan Jarrus in Rebels is a very good Jedi, clearly. And he has a wife. He's married to Hera. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of what we've seen is that, like, Rey has attachments. You know, you can be a great Jedi. So
I mean, the expanded universe did this kind of stuff, you know, before there were rules that they weren't,
right.
Quote unquote rules that they weren't allowed to put that kind of stuff in books and comics. And seeing, like, and having Boba Fett getting trained by the Tuskens at the beginning of the season was very much like another comic story that Dark Horse had put out 15 plus years ago, where they had a Jedi, Aesherad Het, who became trapped on Tatooine and joined up with the Tuskens and became their leader. Like, they healed him and taught him their culture. And so he was a Jedi Tusken, basically.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, because I don't know that one, but have you read the Obi-Wan book that came out a couple of years ago?
Yeah, the John Jackson Miller one.
Yeah, because it also, that was the first time I got introduced to the idea of, like, seeing the Tuskens as, like, a native people that got, an indigenous people that got colonized. And yeah, there also, there's reference to, like, an older, actually, maybe the same character, because they reference, like, a Tusken Jedi from way back in the day. So I think it's the same one.
Yeah, because I think it was when Dark Horse was doing their prequel era comics and stuff like
that. That makes sense.
Yeah, so that would make sense.
Well, so back to this story. I think you're giving me more hope that, like, if I'm not the only one who was like, Luke, come on, that you can't. You're repeating the same problems.
And we know. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm just going to say we know he is going to continue to repeat these issues because of what we find out in The Last Jedi and in Rise of Skywalker. So it's tragic now because it's like, oh, you know, like, you're such a cool character, and you know, there's 20 years of you going way down the wrong path and screwing up more people's lives, unfortunately, and, you know, inciting another war in the galaxy.
Well, and that's another reason why I think if Grogu leaves, it also solves one of the most important problems that I think we've had, which is that if you continue on the path we're going on, I think that leads to Kylo Ren killing Grogu. At which point Kylo Ren becomes the most hated person in all of media history and can never be redeemed in any way. So if Grogu does go off with Mando, that solves that problem somewhat.
I think that's true. Also, you know, we know there's a spot in the N1 Starfighter right behind him that is the perfect size for Grogu, so...
So let me just ask one other thing about this, and then let's get to all the other stuff that happens in this episode. I think so Luke doing that makes sense to me. One of the things I love about Ahsoka's character, though, is that as she says, she's not a Jedi. She was one of the people who saw the problems with the Jedi and stepped away from them. She knew Kanan well. She had no problem with Kanan being a Jedi and being so attached to others. Did it strike you as a little odd that she would sort of be so on board with this, like, no attachment idea?
I don't recall her actually saying that. I mean, other than, you know, just going along with it in terms of not calling it out, right? You know, like by omission. I think she's just, she's so respectful of all beings that, you know, it's like, well, you know, is that really her place? And, you know, Luke is the guy that, you know, just did all this stuff. It, you know, I don't know. There obviously is elements from previous stories that they just obviously can't address everything here. So, but,
yeah,
you know,
so true.
It's a good question. It, again, like you said, maybe in the Ahsoka series, they can know, further address things like that.
I think part of why it also hits a nerve is that I have people in my family and my friend group who are looking into foster parenting and adopting and things like that. And all the science now says that, like, yeah, you know, if a child is fostered by one person for a while and then gets back to their original family, like, sometimes continued contact with a foster parent can be very helpful. So I was just like, come on, basic psychology 101. Like, we know this. But anyway, putting that aside, so let's go back to the Old West of it. What'd you think seeing our old friend Deadwood Cobb Vanth, the sheriff marshal?
That opening scene was awesome. I was like, those pike are not long for this world. he's just so badass in terms of the way that he carries himself. He's very sure of himself, and obviously, you know, he has the skills to back up his words.
Right.
By the time we get to the end, you know, obviously I'm very fearful of what's going to happen to him. You know, there was palpable tension in the ending scenes, but in the middle there where he's ended up talking to the Mando, he's like, you know, things are fine as long as I'm in charge. And basically I'm thinking the same thing that Din was telling him. It's like, what happens when you're not in charge anymore? You know, there are larger problems, and we have to, you know, work together to solve them, even if it's not your problem now. I mean, it's a great parable for the 21st century at the time that we're living in.
So
here,
true. So. Yeah, and remember, that was a theme that came up so often in the Clone Wars and in Rebels, was people who'd be like, oh, all this, like the Civil War or the Clone Wars, that's not our problem yet. And the idea was always like, it's going to come to you. It's you can't hide out here forever.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I love that whole first scene. I love the way, like, think it through is kind of his little tagline. It's his version of, you know, do you feel lucky, punk?
Yeah.
It had that very, like...
I'm waiting to see the memes pop up this week with that. In same way that the I can bring in dead, I can bring in cold. Or I bring in hot and bring in cold.
Bring in warm or cooking cold. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's true. And I also just... There was a moment where you had a moment of like, wait, is he going to keep the spice? That I don't know much about this character, so maybe he is. And then he dumps it out, and you're like, okay, that's exactly the hero character that I think you are
right now. Right, and the use of the spice in here, it's just, I find it also just humorous because, you know, we had the big release of Dune last year. The new version of Dune, obviously Dune has been, I think, in a lot of people's thoughts in the discussion of spice throughout the history of Star Wars and things like that. But, you know, getting to see it very much the same way that it's represented in that movie now is this, you know, orangish, glittery substance that can affect people however it affects people. But I totally respect him. It's like, you know, hey, you guys can peddle your drugs wherever else you want to. You know, Mos Eisley is a horrible place, just not here. And it's like he has got that area buttoned up, and I will be very upset if he is not surviving to come back again.
Agreed. Yeah, I'd be very sad if he dies. What I also love about it is, it's one of those great things you do of you establish how badass someone is, so that when someone else comes along and defeats them, they're even more badass. Like Cad Bane was always such an interesting character to me in the Clone Wars because, like, you know, the first seasons are a lot of fun. They have some really bad episodes. I could really stand to never hear Roger
like
ever again in my life.
Like any first season anywhere, yeah.
And yet anytime Cad Bane shows up, it feels like he's in another show because he is so menacing and so... And I remember thinking, like, there's no way you could do that live action. They nailed Cad Bane live, and just like having it be the brim of his hat, and he only looks up at the very end. For our audience who hasn't seen it, give a quick 30 seconds. Like, who is Cad Bane, and why was it so significant to get to see him like this?
So Cad Bane's another bounty hunter that we were introduced to in the animated Clone Wars series, and he's had I think a few minor appearances in comics throughout the time, but he is like the worst, most menacing kind of character that shows up. I mean, he's the kind of the epitome of what you would expect Boba Fett to have been, I think, in the old days. Very much based on kind of a good, bad, and the ugly sort of character.
The fact that he walks in with a literal black hat on,
yeah,
and like old West style, like he is the black hat.
Yeah, and I'm totally blanking on the name, the character from The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, but yeah, the one that Clint Eastwood faces, the one that's the bad in there, and he definitely can back everything up. It'll be interesting to see. He does have a pair of like rockets on his boots in the cartoon. I didn't see those. He just kind of had some bandoliers wrapped around him in this particular episode. But you got to appreciate a guy who comes up and says, tells someone to stop sticking their nose into his business. And he doesn't even have a nose. I thought
it
was
very true.
Just the way they did his teeth, you know, he's just got these, he's menacing all over, and the glowing red eyes of the Duro. Cause he's one of theirs. So there were two green-skinned, orange-eyed aliens in the original Star Wars in the cantina. You see, for a brief second, he is of that species, the Duro or Duros, depending on your pronunciation for that. So, I'm very excited to see who else they bring in after bringing in Chrysanthemum earlier, who is a relatively new comic character that's been introduced just in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it gives me hope on a couple levels. A, because I just, the whole sort of scum and villainy aspect of Star Wars is often played as kind of like, there's some menace, but also there's a lot of fun. You know, the Han Solos, the Lando Calrissians, my personal favorite, who I don't know, I'm afraid to see him live action because I don't want them to do him wrong, but I will be so happy if they can get him in live action and do it right, Hondo Ohnaka.
Oh.
Like, Hondo Ohnaka is, like, the crown prince of the, like, we often talk about him. He's the one who's always like, they betrayed me, I'm so proud of them. Like, he's almost like a Jack Sparrow kind of type. And Cad Bane was always so powerful because he was the exception to the rule. He was the actual, like, he seemed like he just stepped out of, like, a Tarantino film or, like, No Country for Old Men. You know, like, he's not joking around. And we did see him in The Bad Batch. He was the one who was fighting Fennec over trying to kidnap Omega. And, yeah, so just seeing him and what he's doing, it's a very cliched role. You know, it's the, I'm just telling you, I just want you to stay out of trouble and no trouble will come to you. You know, it's kind of the exact, and you know, if you've ever seen any TV show or movie, that it's going to backfire. You know that it's going to have the effect of getting either our hero or our hero's people to be like, well, screw this. We're not going to let Cad Bane push us around. We've got to fight back.
Yeah.
But you also see how, I mean, the fact that he literally just walks away, anyone could have shot him in the back. No one does.
That would have been a bad idea. Yeah, I mean.
Right? Like,
there are not too many characters that provide that kind of menace in the Star Wars universe. I never felt that way about Darth Vader. I felt he was, you don't want to mess with him, but, not the same way like I got out with Darth Maul in the prequels and, Palpatine in the Long Game and then Cad Bane here. He also, the voice actor that performed him in the Clone Wars, Corey Burton, who is a voice actor who has done tons of cartoon voices. Like, you would have seen a dozen things that he's voiced. He also does the voice here. He was credited in this particular episode, and he introducing that very low register, slightly, I detect like a slight Southern drawl to his words, as if he's from down on the bayou or something, and it's just, he just savors all the syllables there. It's just, it's great.
That's such a good way of putting it. It's that, yeah, because it doesn't quite sound Southern, but it's a draw. And it's the voice of someone who's in absolutely no hurry because he knows that you're going to wait on his words.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There is never, I don't think there's ever been a moment, even when he's being, like, his plans are thwarted, where I don't feel like Cad Bane is completely in control of what's happening around him.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, you know, showing us how capable Cobb Vanth is and how cool he plays it, to have him then be bested by this guy who really didn't do anything. He just walked in, stood there, mm-hmm. said his piece, and then shot two people. The second one that honestly I think the that was a bad pick for the deputy.
Yeah,
he was not good at following orders.
and it's one of those things where, like, we talk about tropes and cliches because often they're kind of dull. Like, we've seen it a bunch of times. From the minute the deputy comes out, I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's mind of what's going to happen. The deputy is going to jump the gun, and it's going to wind up getting both him and Cobb in real trouble.
Yeah.
And yet still, the tension of it and the, like, edge of your seatness was perfectly done.
Well,
and
I mean, with Filoni being a student of film and of Star Wars and Favreau as well, I'm sure they're both well-versed in Hitchcock's rule, you know, of you show the danger, you show the bomb under the table, and then you just have the characters talk for 5 minutes, and that is suspense. Right. That is you setting up the stakes and then going, all right, well, now we're just going to pay attention to other stuff. And when, you know, the audience can't think of anything other than there's a bomb under the table.
Right.
Which actually reminds me of an actual bomb under the table, which felt like a reference to one of my favorite films, The Untouchables, when the two Pike brought in the container.
I got that same reference.
To blow up the casino there.
Yeah. Yeah, it really, because that scene in The Untouchables, part of what it's about is the idea of, like, you know, you cannot stop Capone. If the Capone crime family wants to do damage, you're not going to be able to stop them. And it's the syndicate just kind of showing, like, nothing is safe. You know, nothing is untouchable.
Exactly, right. And they don't have a line that they won't cross.
Yeah.
Yeah. And which upsets me too, because two things. One, Jennifer Beals felt like we barely got anything, so hopefully she's not dead. But also, they didn't show him in this episode, but hopefully Max Rebo wasn't in there, because this will be the second explosion he'll have survived.
You hope so. You know, even though that the musical genre that he gave his name to is that he created is terribly, terribly named, as we've already discussed. So I'm not going to name it again. But he is a great character. We love ourselves some Max Rebo. Although apparently he's a snitch in one of the comic book stories. I haven't dived into that.
Yeah, he's a dirty rat. A
couple of the last things I want to touch on. First, although I'm sad we're not getting more Boba, because I do still love him as a character and I want to see more of him. One of my complaints about the first four episodes is that I felt like Fennec Shand was very much in the background. Mm-hmm. And so getting to see her really get to shine, and it, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, do you do what you're supposed to do because of who the star is, or do you do what makes sense for the story? In terms of the story, this felt right in that, like, Boba is in control, but Fennec is his consigliere, and she's a wartime consigliere, very much so.
Yeah.
We're at wartime, and so he's like, I'm going to step back, I'm going to let her run the show, and it really shows her expertise. And so I did, like, again, it was that, like, yeah, I love Temuera Morrison, I want to see him do more, but it didn't feel like there was an artificial reason why he was shutting up. Like, in the story, it was great to see her shine, and I felt like, he would just sit and watch her.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I feel like, I mean, and anything that I can see Ming-Na in, you know, I was a huge fan of her in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I've been a fan of her in a number of other things previous. But you're right, it does make sense, and everything in Star Wars should be driven for the story, contrary to what the internet thinks. I know it's cool, and you want to see your favorite characters have their moments and, you know, sit around sipping on, you know, mint juleps, talking about, you know, the Clone Wars and stuff like that. But you can't have that all the time. And it totally makes sense. And I'm fine if Boba is, you know, if he's the crime lord sitting in the background running things, you know, the first scene that we saw of him in the end of The Mandalorian, you know, really put him in that Conan pose where, you know, he's the king, you're kind of sitting back and you run your generals out and you have them do what they need to do.
This is a long stretch, but did you ever watch the old Justice League animated TV show, the one that kind of was a continuation of the Batman the Animated Series?
Oh, my kids and I really enjoyed that when it was coming out. Justice League United, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, Unlimited,
like that. Unlimited, that was it, yeah.
One thing I love about that is that they were very, and granted, you can do this with animation because you don't have a bunch of actors sitting around set waiting to do something. But, you know, if there's a story that involves the Martian, I can't remember
John
his name.
Jones.
If you have a story that involves John Jones, the Martian, you know, the Martian Manhunter, that's it. You know, you can just go off, and if Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman don't appear for a couple of episodes, that's fine.
Yeah.
And I kind of love the idea that maybe, and maybe they'll just start calling it, like, you know, life below the radar screen in After the Jedi. Like, that's a terrible name for a TV show, but it'll be like, you know, we're going to follow Boba doing a couple things, and then we're going to go off and do this, and then we're going to, you know, follow this traffic cop who flies an X-Wing because he's played by Paul Sun Young Lee, who's a fan. Like, that's going to be a movie about fighter pilots, you know, right. We're not just doing traffic cop stuff. Like,
And it becomes more what it is now, what it's turning into, I guess. It's not a Boba Fett-centered show. It's not a Mandalorian-centered show. It's an ensemble, which, you know, like Deadwood or The Sopranos or, you know, Breaking Bad, you know, we don't necessarily follow the main character all the time, right? You go off and you tell other character stories. And even in your spinoffs, you focus on characters from the original series sometimes, you know? So I think that's it's an interesting way for them to play it and to get kind of the best of all worlds, right? You get your chances to do the Western and the samurai epic with the lightsaber fights, but also you get your gunfights and your space battles and your bounty hunting. Yeah. You know, it's just this mix of things, and whatever they call the show, I'm going to watch it. Though it does kind of, you know, make you wonder, what are they going to do then for an Ahsoka show? Is it really going to be an Ahsoka show, or is it more Obi-Wan show? Is it? Right. I think we know the Obi-Wan show is going to be more than just Obi-Wan hanging out, right? We've heard some rumors about other actors and stuff that are going to be in that. So
talk about a time where I wish the voice actor Matt Lautner was doing that instead of Mr. Haydenson coming back. But that's that's my own cross to bear.
Yeah. That'll be interesting to see what they do. But also that's very exciting to involve the original actor or the more recent actor in that.
If nothing else, with the Obi-Wan show, and we're kind of on a tangent here, so we can start wrapping up. My other big complaint about this so far is that I was so excited to see more of the Tuskens. And so for them to just be killed, and granted, they gave it to us as, you know, because at first I was like, this is just Dances with Wolves. And then once he realized, no, the whole point is that that Boba screwed up by getting them all in trouble. Like, I like that story beat. But I am a little unsatisfied that we haven't gotten more of the Tuskens, and I don't know if there's going to be a scene where he kind of like rallies the Tuskens to help them as part of this big battle we're building to. But if nothing else, I certainly think we're going to get a lot more of them in either the Kenobi or probably in the Kenobi show. So
yeah, we'll see where that goes. Two episodes ago, when he was when Fennec Shand was suggesting that they get more muscle, part of me for a split second before I realized, oh yeah, they're probably going to go for the Mandalorian, was, oh, I wonder if they're going to bring, you know, another tribe in,
right,
you know, as, which unfortunately, I think if they did do that with the kind of the heavy hitters that you see, of course, they would end up just being fodder, which is reducing the role of the Tusken species or characters on the show. Which they've already built them up as more important than just being that, and really kind of have already shown that with the train episode. So
You kind of lose if the whole point is that Boba realizes that he got them killed by you know, overstating what he thought he could do. Yeah, if he just rounds them up to be cannon fodder, it completely undoes that. So they kind of can't be at that for that. But that's why I hope we'll get to see them in another
show. They were the learning curve for him to be in this new position. Because, you know, now when he invites the mods in, or Chrysanthemum, or The Mandalorian, he is aware and hopefully is making them aware of the risks he has with this. And, you know, hopefully we'll understand that when he pushes, right, he knows that there is a chance that they will get pushed back and, you know, there will be people that die. And I'm sure there will be people that die, and it's probably going to be the mods at this point. But, you know, that's the growth that we're getting for this character, which is, you know, unexpected. This is not where I thought we would be seeing the story go. But, you know, I'm kind of down for 30 to 15 minutes of Star Wars every week. It's whatever. That's great.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so any other I have two last questions for you. But first, any other last points you wanted to comment on or things we hadn't gotten to touch on?
No, not really. I mean, other than just like the fact that, you know, we lost all these interesting characters potentially in the bombing of the cantina gambling casino that we didn't really get to explore. But of course, you know, they've been doing flashbacks now, so who knows, we probably will get some other stuff there. And I'm just looking forward to seeing where they go with this. It's one of those shows, there are some episodic shows where they really intrigue me and I do want to figure out where they're going, and here I'm just kind of sitting back and not wasting too much of my brain on it, because not that I would get wrapped up in what my idea was and thinking that's how it should go, but I just am letting it wash over me rather than expending a lot of my energy on it. I want to talk to people about it and discuss it and say, hey, this was cool and I wish they had done that, but whatever else they've got, yeah, just keep bringing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's significant that the thing that we were kind of most, you know, a little saddened about was the stuff that's the most connected to the larger story we already know, you know, the stuff about Luke and Grogu and the Jedi.
Yeah,
and like part of what I've been liking, it's kind of part of what I liked about Rogue One so much, is it's not connected to, like, it's a story beat in the larger story, but I don't need to care about what's gonna, like, there's no pre-existing story where I'm like, well, it's gotta, like, I didn't like the Han Solo movie because I just felt like it wasn't my Han Solo, you know. And some people love it, and that's fine, but yeah, I think the ability to explore all the stuff that happens below the radar screen, you know, has just been so good. So one last little thing I just needed to say, particularly because Paul Hoppe, who's a regular co-host of mine, he's really kind of put animal rights much more in my head and than they should have been. And so now I'm thinking about it all the time. Luke, like, picking up all those frogs and then just dropping them out of nowhere. Like, come on, be nicer to the wildlife. Like, you're preventing Grogu from eating them. Great. But still, like, you know, they only have one eye. They've got a tough enough life already.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't touching them, right? He wasn't rubbing their mucus off of them so they could get infections and stuff. So, yeah, but that was not great. And jumping on the backs of the water buffalo or whatever, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, so here's my last two questions. In this big battle scene we're going to get, is Boba Fett going to be riding a Rancor, and will Danny Trejo show up somehow?
Oh, boy.
And he's just, like, I'm sure he's got a character name. He is just Danny Trejo. That's just, there's nothing, he will never be anything else to me but Danny Trejo.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm surprised he hasn't been named after a knife of some kind. Like, his name's not Vibroblade or something like that.
Yes, that'd be so good.
Boy, you know what? I was thinking that he was going to go back and get a Bantha. In the last 2 weeks, I've forgotten about the Rancor. Yeah. I think that would be awesome, you know, and given the fact that they did canonically mention the Night Sisters riding the Rancors on their home planet, which was an expanded universe story beat from way long ago, way back in the 90s.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm all for that.
Yeah, like, on the one hand, I feel like it hasn't really been earned. We haven't seen him. Like, we haven't gotten, like, the Mandalorian with the Blurg type thing.
Yeah.
But, like, hey, maybe that's why Boba Fett hasn't been doing much the last two episodes.
Right, right. He's been training. Yeah.
He's been learning about these emotionally complex creatures that are Banthas.
Whatever. Okay.
Exactly. All right. Well, Jay, thank you so much. You're the perfect guest for this. I'm so glad we got to talk about this. For folks who are excited about what you've got to say and they want to find more of it, where can they find more of your writings or podcasting?
You can find all of my work at retrozap.com. That's where we've got a show called Superhero Suite, which is a biweekly show where we discuss all things superheroes, reviews, comics, movies, TV shows, whatever. I do that with my co-host Josh, and we also have a show called a weekly show called Enjoy Stuff, where we find the fun in everything, kind of a retro podcast, just talking about pop culture that we grew up with and that we share with our families and kids. And coming back in just a few weeks here, we will have Scarlet Velocity, which is a Flash podcast that is continuing to follow the eighth season of The Flash here. We've been on hiatus for so long now. I don't even know where we are with that. And I also do some written stuff over there as well. Do a Sci-Fi Saturdays write-up each week, just following an iconic science fiction film, doing a little review of that. And MC Location Scout, which charts all of the filming locations of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films and TV shows. So if you want to know where anything was filmed, mclocationscout.com.
Yeah, that resource is a big part of what we talked with you about when we got you on the Marvel Movie Minute. It is such a great resource. I definitely enjoy checking it out. I definitely want to listen to your Enjoy Things podcast, because I know I'm part of this sometimes, but I do feel like there is such a, you know, saying you like something isn't interesting, and so you have to have a take. You have to be edgy. You have to say it. And no. Sometimes we can just enjoy things.
And it's okay not to enjoy everything. And like on our recent episode, we were talking about the Matrix films and, you know, our ideas of why we liked or didn't like parts of them, but that there is something in everything to enjoy and just, you know, share with your friends.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much. Sure. Folks, definitely check out what Jay's got to say, and definitely check out Jay's podcasts and writings. Of course, if you want to hear more about what I'm doing, go to theethicalpanda.com. There you'll find this podcast and all the episodes of the Superhero Ethics podcast and the other things I do. Of course, there is also a great way to give us feedback. What do you think of this episode? Are you really liking like the way Luke's training Grogu? Did some of it not quite work for you? Let us know what you have to say. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter. You can email us, use the contact form, whatever you want to do. So I have myself, Jay. Thank you all so much for being a great audience. Thank you for tuning in, and have a great day.